Their experience in sports varies.
Of course, Vinny's got experience in the NFL, and I suck at electric football.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 FM.
There's a drive to left field by O'Neill. This one's long gone. He's got a multi-home run game over everything in left for the second time tonight. Ref Snyder and O'Neill go back to back.
You know, it's gave up four runs there, you know, back-to-back homers. I just didn't think he had his off-speed command. I thought the fastball was good, but with a mostly all-righty lineup, just didn't execute his off-speed pitches. Didn't, you know, did keep us in the game, got it in the fifth. Our guys are grinding, there's no doubt. And, you know, we got to just turn the page on this and come back tomorrow. And not a whole lot went right tonight. Wasted a couple opportunities, and then just had a tough time putting zeros up out of the bullpen. Our guys know. I mean, I actually thought our bats were better early. I thought we were more competitive offensively tonight. Nice to see Rutsch get going and get some good swings. But once Kate came out, it was pretty tough time.
Brandon Hyder, his manager, after last night's demolition at the hand of the Red Sox. And let's put this in perspective, too. Football coach versus baseball manager. John Harbaugh's had 4 days to reflect and gather his thoughts to talk about the Ravens' loss last week to Kansas City. Brandon Hyde has to do it every single night. And he does it after the game and before the game. So he's basically gotten into broken record territory with the Orioles because the offensive woes continue on. Doesn't get testy. Doesn't throw his team under the bus.
Yep.
He just states facts. We. It's always we. He didn't go, Craig Kimbrell sucked. And I can't believe Eloy Jimenez struck out with bases loaded and only one out. And then Kowser, what the hell are you swinging? He doesn't go there.
Like Dion?
Yeah. And in his sons and right. Hunter and all of them. I'll tell you what. Talk about overhyped. Whatever. We digress. So Brandon Hyde understands the problemo facing his team. Kay Povich has had one really good start, one decent start. He got rocked last night, and his command may have been off. We get all that. It's the nuances of pitching. You want to hit your spots. You don't want to serve up meatballs. You want to be ahead in the count. You want to count on your defense, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But is he reliable enough to go every fifth day over the next 3 weeks of the season? Because you're out of options. Grayson Rodriguez, we don't know when he's coming back. We all know the story of the out for the season starting pitchers. Chase McDermott, he's out with a shoulder after making a cup of coffee debut in Baltimore. So Kay Povich got a ride with him. And I don't know if that's good enough. Bullpen is what it is. Now I'm getting into broken record territory. This is a narrative we've been having for a couple months now. And I'm going to repeat what I said last week, yesterday, 2 weeks ago. Since June 20th, and I always reference that date, because that's when they beat the Yankees 17-5. They were 24 games above 500. They had bitch slapped them there. They bitch slapped them 3 out of 4 at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. They were frustrated to the point they were throwing at Orioles left and right. Since then, they're 33-38. Whew. They're now 500 since the All-Star break. They're 4-4 in the month of September. They're an average to below average team. And this isn't a 2 week slump. What's this, September?
Yeah, September 10th.
In 10 days, it'll be 3 months since that Yankee demolition.
Wow.
3 months! And they're 5 games below 500, but they built up enough equity that they're going to make the playoffs. And I've been saying this for a couple of weeks now, and I'm going to repeat it today. I'd be more surprised if the Orioles are playing in the divisional round, and definitely in the ALCS, than I would be if they lose in the first round of the playoffs. It's just there's too many offensive woes. And by the way, tip of the cap, I'm not wearing a hat, but, you know, what do they say? Theoretically speaking, to you, Matt Weirich, he said, I'd move Mullins up into two-hole. And that's exactly what Hyder did. So, Matt Weyrich, good on you. Even though he didn't have a great game to play. Made a hell of a catch.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was a highlight reel. I mean, he was horizontal. I mean, that was as good. And Kowser made the one hand off the wall.
Yep,
threw out Refs Niner at the plate. So that was good. Tony Taters hit his 40th homer. There you go. Highlights of the Orioles. But what changes? I don't know if anything can. Craig Kimbrell looks like a guy that if he's on the team in October, he won't be on the roster. He's not going to be on the playoff roster. He's not. How's he helping you? Gregory Soto inherited runners scored. Yeah. Cole Irving gave up home runs. Oriole pitching staff made Ref Snyder and O'Neill look like Rice and Lynn or Williams and Yastrzemski. Named two Red Sox studs, Dwight Evans and Reggie Smith. They were bashing away. Twice they went back-to-back. So I'm not saying it's doom and gloom. They are a game and a half out of first because the Yankees won last night, getting some big hits late against Kansas City. But what leads us to believe that anything's going to change for them unless the bats get hot? Nolan, get in here. Bases loaded, one out. You already got a run on the board. Jimenez and then Moo Man come up, and they don't even put the ball in play. And Ben McDonald said during the broadcast before the game, just put the ball in play.
Yep.
Sunday's game. First and second, nobody out. Three straight strikeouts. You put the ball in play, you know, a dribbler here. Pitcher throws it down the right field line. Somebody boots it. There are possibilities when you put it in play. When you strike out, the only hope that you have is the catcher drops the third strike, which is rare. So for them to just not, and then Boston ties it in the bottom of the inning, and then it just kind of snowballed from there. Nolan, the inability to hit with runners in scoring position has been a season long, well, certainly since May. It's been a big problem for them, and I don't see it being rectified because right now Gunnar Henderson is the only guy, player of the week, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he was.
Only guy hitting with consistency. Taters had a couple ribbies last night, including the 40th homer. But after that, what the hell, man?
Right, unless you're Aaron Judge, the one-man show stuff's just not going to be enough to carry an entire offense. So you give Gunnar credit because there was a couple weeks there where he was looking a little rough. So it is encouraging that he's coming out of it. But the approach, like you said, just the plate approach when runners in scoring position or based on the game situation, sometimes the approach makes no sense. When they got their second run last night, it was a bases loaded walk with Santander. Even he got ahead 2-0. Did his best to try to bail Brian Bayo out of it, but then eventually gets walked on a pitch that was way out of the zone. Next at bat was O'Hearn comes up, swings at the first pitch.
Yep.
After Bayo had just shown you across multiple at bats prior that he was having trouble finding the zone.
Yeah, he had plunked Mullins to load the bases and then walks Santander, and then O'Hearn comes up, and maybe you're thinking, all right, well, he's wild. So he might try to groove one, and then you want to get ahead of it, and he just flies out weakly to left field.
But I've always had the approach.
Uprising squashed.
Well, especially when you're in a slump, right? And you're just straight up, you're not doing enough to put good bat on the ball, get good contact. I'm looking for any way I can to have a positive impact on the game. And in that situation right there, I don't understand how you can swing. Bayo needs to prove that he can put the ball over the plate before I'm even going to think about swinging in that situation. And at the time, it was a close game.
4-2.
Yeah.
I'm hearing you, and I'm feeling your anger and your pain. But, again, we're coming up on 3 months of this, and they get these hot streaks. They've had one three-game winning streak since the All-Star break, which has now been destroyed because they've lost three in a row and 4-5. They're right now, they're a slightly below average ball club. But again, they were so good for 2.5 months that they built up all of this win equity. They're going to make the playoffs. But I can understand, and I'm kind of one of the, and nobody wants them to win more than me. And I want them to win for guys like Nolan, who've never experienced World Series and championship level play. You've sniffed that ALCS 10 years ago. They were good last year, won quietly. I want Lanolin, Nolan, Joe LaCroix, these people to experience a World Series because they've never seen that. before. And I don't know if this year is going to be the year. And yeah, you can build in with the injury excuses for sure. But if you want to do glass half full, I'm sure on September 10th, 2023, you would have had to be on crack to predict the Arizona Diamondbacks would have went to the World Series last year. And the Orioles now, well, I don't want to say that, but the Arizona Diamondbacks, nobody expected that to happen. And they made it all the way to the Fall Classic and beat a lot of good teams on their way to doing things. So we can't say anything absolute, but I'm skeptical that the Orioles' October appearance will last longer than a series.
Right, and for the longest time, we thought it was going to be the bullpen, right, or the starting pitching, and now it's the offense, which is just absurd. And outside of a game like last night where the pitching was obviously terrible, recently the pitching's been good enough more often than not. The bullpen, which was extremely depleted for the longest time and looked hopeless for a month there, they've started to kind of figure things out a little more consistently. Again, last night, poor example, but for the most part, the pitching's been fine. And who would have thought that the offense would be the reason that they're losing? And that's something where the injuries outside of Westberg, I can't even use an excuse for the injuries. Are we really going to sit here and cry about Ramon Arias not being available?
I mean, he was hot. Kind of were yesterday, if memory serves.
Well, he was hot before he got injured. But outside of Westberg, it's nowhere near the injuries they've suffered from a pitching perspective. They've got a whole rotation on the IL right now, mm-hmm. a good rotation at that. So it makes no sense.
Hey, Braves been decimated by injuries. Dodgers been decimated by injuries. A lot of teams have had that problemo, and they're still hanging around. Again, the Orioles are still in a strong playoff situation, but they need to get it together. Game two against Boston coming up tonight. We'll talk about that with Ryan Ripken later in the program. Monday Night Football, we'll talk about that when we return. Aaron Rodgers had his first touchdown drive since 2022. We'll get into that. And Lamar Jackson was not at practice yesterday for the Ravens. What does all of this mean as the home opener's coming up Sunday? Ravens, big favorites, 9.5 against the Raiders. The illegal formation and what we were talking about yesterday, there were 20 of those called over the weekend, 5 against the Ravens on Thursday night. Bill Belichick even brought it up yesterday during the Manning cast for Monday Night Football, which we'll get to here in a second. But you heard John Harbaugh there, Vinny, pretty much defending Ronnie and thought that he was doing everything within the rules for a new rule. Real quick, let's go back. Why are they emphasizing this again? What's the problemo here?
The dude from Kansas City last year, remember in the opener against Detroit, it was embarrassing. Remember, because on TV they kept saying, he's a yard deep in the back. I mean, it was abusive.
Right.
And I think they want to, then the next week they penalized him a couple times. And I guess they wanted to start out with everybody being lined up properly. But Harbs talked in the press conference. He said, listen, we had the NFL officials here, and Ronnie's lining up the same way then as he is now. And Ronnie even asked him about it when the officials were here. And Bob, it's all about different crews. Hockley's crew, they call more penalties than anybody every year. And they had, you know, they had the red ass or something. That's what they wanted to,
right,
to do. And, I mean, 3 times in one drive, come on. I mean, and, Bob, they called it 3 times, but the first time they gave him a warning.
Yeah.
So 4.
Yep. And the Ravens actually scored on that drive.
Yeah.
But still, it set the tone because we were watching the game, all of us, of course, wherever you were. It's like, really? Is this going to be like a thing? But it was emphasized that Thursday night, but it seemed as though either you brought this up, good point, yesterday, that the other teams watched what the hell was going on with the Ravens, that whatever they're doing, we're doing the opposite. And then it became, it was not a story outside of Thursday's opener, Baltimore,
nope.
Kansas.
They, message sent and message received. And that's what happened. You know, because most people are watching the game on Thursday night. The NFL people are watching it. And they're like, you know, I mean, if you're the head coach, and they're probably a good chance that they were home on Thursday night. I'm calling the O-line coach. Hey, you see that? You watching this? You know, you got to make sure your guys are in the next day in your team meeting. Guys, last night in that game, make sure offensive line that you guys are lined up properly because they're looking to call it. And then, Bob, when you go before the game, hour and a half before the game, the referees come and meet with each coach individually. You know, you got any questions, anything you want to ask? Yeah. How are you calling that?
Now, penalties aside, and we'll do film study tomorrow, you have stated, going back to Friday and then yesterday, that you thought Ronnie Stanley played well.
I did.
In that game against KC.
I thought he played well. I thought he showed some anchor ability, showed his athleticism and stuff. So I was pleasantly surprised. Not totally surprised, because he's played pretty good.
He's healthy.
You know, in practice. And he's healthy. So I think he's only going to get better, Bob, because he'll gain him some confidence in that one. So I think left tackle, they'll be fine there, and they'll be fine at center. The biggest problem I have right now is right guard. That's the biggest problem. And then the inconsistencies of the left guard and the right tackle. So the three new guys, the problem they've got is they're just inconsistent all the time. And even Lindenbaum was, you know, had a whiff or two, too. But
sure.
First time that he's played is since August 2nd.
Now, with Voorhees, who's basically a rookie, Rosengarten, who is a rookie,
mm-hmm.
and then Faalele, who's in his third year, I mean, who do you have, who you're more optimistic about taking the game to the acceptable level? We're not asking him to be Art Shell or Jonathan Ogden or anything like that, but who can be acceptable enough that they will become less of a worry? Max Crosby's looming on Sunday, and he can get after the best of offensive line.
Yeah, and then the next week, oh my God. You know, then the speed, and that guy's
Micah
coming.
Micah Parsons,
But
and
I
then
think
you got Von Miller and Russo in Buffalo now.
I think Voorhees will come along quick. McCary. McCary, you know, I mean, he may get overpowered at sometimes, but he's going to compete. He's going to know what he's supposed to do, and he'll be acceptable. Now, Faalele's going to, he's got to lose some weight, I think, just because he gets his body out of control. I mean, 380 pounds is probably hard to control, you know, but he gets too high. His fundamentals go to hell maybe when he gets tired. He gets high, and then he can't reach people and everything, and then he gets tired. I would like to see him just play low. And Bob, I have the least confidence in him. But I you see a couple of plays. I'm sure that, you know, when they're sitting there watching film, you know, I don't even know Falele's first name.
Daniel.
Oh, yeah, Daniel.
Really? You don't?
I call him Faalele all the time, you know? I'd be like, if I'm the old line coach, Daniel, you see how you did it this time? This is perfect how you're supposed to do it. But he can't do it that often. That's the problem, isn't it? And, you know, I hear people bitching and complaining about, oh, Henry only had 11 carries. Bob, I showed you some of the tape.
Yeah, he got drilled.
I mean, there's no holes.
Yeah.
They're not knocking anybody off the ball. That's the problem right now. And it's not going to get easier this week. The D tackle, the kid they got from Miami, is awesome. Wilkerson, he's a stud. He's really good. So it's gonna be difficult there too.
Ravens at home Sunday, home opener, taking on the Las Vegas Raiders, who lose to the Chargers. J.K. Dobbins, big day there as they bring Max Crosby and the rest to the equation. Hey, Gardner Minshew won in Baltimore last year when he was with the Colts, so it's not like he's going to be overwhelmed by the moment. But 9.5 points is your spread, and we'll get into that obviously throughout the course of the week. Kevin Ostreicher will be joining us. As a matter of fact, 11 o'clock. Nolan, we have time for a call. Nolan, you make the call on the call. Let's go get Ed and Towson. Ed, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, man? Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
All right.
Vinny, you know as well as I do, that Faalele guy, it's about reps. And you're going to have to put him under a lot of pressure. And he's going to have to learn. I mean, you can tell him all you want. But getting back to the left, the tackle thing, I can remember before the game, Vinny, when I was coaching, I would always go to the referee, and I was like, okay, how much you going to give me? And what I meant by that when I was coaching is my left tackle, like how much of that foot can I get back? Because you're doing it to get a competitive advantage. I mean, Stanley's getting older. He's got to get there a lot quicker. And you want that kick step. It's called a bucket step. And the bucket step allows you to catch up a little bit with a guy that's sitting out there at like a nine or way outside the tackle. So I would ask the referee, how much are you going to give me? And sometimes he's like, I ain't going to give you nothing. And then I would take as much until he gets ready to throw the flag. So part of it is the tackles are trying to get an advantage. And with this crew, they're going to have to do that. But look, Vin, real quick.
Vin.
How long are they going to have to use the tight ends to chip? Is that going to affect, is that going to affect the tight ends, what they do if they got to constantly chip with those guys? And do you think that's something they're going to have to do?
Well, I think, like last night, if you watch that game, especially the Manning cast, and even Peyton was saying, or Belichick might have said, with Bosa, you chip him every time. He's that good. I mean, when a guy's that good, you give him the respect. You don't have a guy that can block him one-on-one. And with Crosby, he's going to need a chip. Michael Parsons the next week, you're going to need to chip him wherever he's at. And it's going to be select cases, but if the guy's that, like, for the Ravens, there's nobody I would chip.
It's Haney and Vin.
You're right.
Vin and Haney. Here at 105.7 The Fan. Nolan McGraw's on the other side of the glass. Turn it up Tuesday. You want it loud? We'll crank it up. Send your song request to the Plaza Board text line at 410-583-1057. Orioles get spanked last night. Haney's have been red a lot since June 20th, and they're real red today. Maybe some blister on it. Brandon Hyde's got to sprinkle some talcum powder to make that Heine less red. Boston game two of this series. The Orioles lose a game because the Yankees won. Monday Night Football last night, as you heard on The Fan, Aaron Rodgers made his return, and he was overshadowed by a guy that most of you have never heard of before. Monday Night Football, it was the return of Aaron Rodgers against the San Francisco 49ers, but Jordan Mason made a name for himself because Christian McCaffrey was a scratch with the calf. And he hadn't, what, he hadn't been around all training camp,
nope.
Right?
He's had the calf and Achilles the whole time.
147 and a touchdown. Brock Purdy was efficient based on, you know, their high expectations.
Bob, the one, he threw a perfect pass to Ayuk for a touchdown and dropped it and ended up getting a field goal. So, I mean, it could have even been worse.
Debo was kind of the de facto running back early because of McCaffrey's absence. He did score a touchdown, Debo Samuel. But Aaron Rodgers returned, and, you know, we were talking before the show started. First of all, to me, he does not look right in a Jets uniform.
No.
He just, hey, dude, you look like a guy that, like, stole a Jets uniform.
Well, especially with those black high tops.
Yeah. But he made a couple of good throws, but he looked a little early on, Vinny, we should say, on the aged side.
He did. And, you know, like you mentioned earlier off air, a little tentative early on, which is right because he hadn't played in over a year and he's coming off an Achilles and he had no preseason games. That's his first live contact since the four plays, since a year ago. So he's going to get nothing but better because he's going to get more comfortable. To me, the bigger concern was the defense. They gave up 180 yards rushing, and this is a defense that was in the top five last year. They better get their crap together a little bit.
Yeah, the Jets have some interesting games coming up, and we'll get to the schedule. We'll get to the AFC North report later on in the show as well. Deshaun Watson, before we get out to the phones. Another lawsuit coming his way, an alleged sexual assault back in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, and if you read the story, it's kind of an interesting, it's a long story. You got to, you know, go pull it up and read it. Yeah. But if I was the Cleveland Browns, if I was in their management and there was any, if I'm the owner or whatever, you look at that contract. Is there any way we can get out of this with, you know, if he gets, you know, busted again, you know, if it, you know, because
like morals clause or
something to be able to get out of that contract and we can recoup some of that money, that would be big because I mean, Bob, it's been 3 years and we keep saying, is he going to ever go back to the Houston guy? I don't see how he's going to go back to be what he was in Houston.
No, I think that ship has sailed. Yep. But I would think you would still hope that he can be the top half of the NFL level quarterback. But is he respected by his own teammates?
Yeah, that I don't know. And I don't know if he hangs around with his teammates and everything. But, Bob, did you read the story about what he did with that girl?
I did not. I didn't want to get too deep.
Norm, did you read it?
I did. Some pretty scathing stuff.
Yeah, Bob.
Now, was she of the masseuse variety? Or hey, let's go out and we'll meet and have a little dinner here.
He had his representatives contact her. Would you like Derek's number or whatever? And he said, yeah. So then for a couple months, they just texted back and forth. And then he invited her to a gala for the Houston Oilers or the Texans.
Yes.
And she said, no, why don't you just come over to my apartment for dinner? So then he comes
over.
People
misread that sort of thing.
He comes over for dinner, Bob. He comes over for dinner and she goes, I'm not ready yet. I'm going to go finish up in the bathroom. And then she walks out and he's not there. So she walks into her bedroom and he's laying there face down naked. Naked, face down on the bed. And he says, rub my buttocks. Rub my butt. And she goes, no. She said, I'll rub your back, but I won't rub your butt.
Oh, boy.
You know, and then supposedly undid her robe and, you know, he forcibly had sex with her.
Well, there you go. I mean, I wasn't there, but if you're a cop, based on the previous accusations.
But if you're a cop, and I heard the morning show talking about it this morning, if you're a cop, you know, and if somebody says, you know, rub my butt, no, I'll just rub your back, and he's laying there naked. Come on, you know, I mean, she could just say, hey, get out of my house. What are you doing? Get out of my house.
I'm not saying anything. Because I got things going through my head. Why are you in the robe? You're in the bathroom. And, and he says he's naked. And you said you're not ready. It's like, you need to get out of my house or I'm going to call the police.
What'd you think,
well,
Norm?
Once she raised the fuss finally and said, all right, enough is enough. Then he threw Well, he threw a fit and stormed out.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a big jump between, all right, massage my back and what happened next. There's a big gap there, and he jumped right over it.
Yeah, well, he's laying there, Bob, and then he rolls over, and then, you know what was standing at attention.
Well, again, it's disturbing for Deshaun Watson, and if what the young lady is saying is true, then, you know, the scumbag level increases even more. But it doesn't seem to want to go away. And for the Browns, like you just said, what's their next course of action here? Because I guess based on his play, let's be honest, if he was playing like Patrick Mahomes, they'd be making every excuse in the book to defend him.
I don't think they've said anything.
Yeah, I mean, they would probably like to exercise themselves from arguably the worst contract in the history of professional sports.
And this is like, what, number 24 or 25
And he's already settled with others.
Yeah. So
crazy time in Cleveland, but we will get to the AFC North report. Hang tight when we come back. Vinny's Dirty Dozen coming up at 11 o'clock. We've got Kevin Allstriker, USA Today, the Ravens Wire. Whip around 11:15. Hey, we got some Orioles and Ravens history to address, so stay tuned for that. Maryland's at UVA this coming Saturday night. Talk about that a little bit as well. Orioles get spanked last night. Bad. They led 1-0. Looked like they might be putting up crooked numbers against Brian Bayo in the first inning. They didn't. Then they wound up getting Rob Refsnyder. You are now annoying to me, Rob Refsnyder. I find you completely annoying. Rob Refsnyder was the guy that ran into the wall at Camden Yards where they put the tape outline on it when he played for the Twins. He's played for like every team in the American League except for the Orioles. But Rob Refsnyder looked like Ted Williams last night. Say with Tyler O'Neill, Orioles lose. They've lost three in a row. Yankees won. Birds game and a half out of first place. And they're five games below 500 since their high watermark of the season. That was June 20th at Yankee Stadium.
Vinny and Haney's Dirty Dozen. The 12 best NFL teams according to our GM, Vinny Serrato.
You're damn right I'm serious. Look, they might not be pretty, but any one of mine is worth 10 of yours.
105.7 The Fan.
Week one NFL season is done. Last night, San Francisco, defending NFC champions 32-19 over the Jets. Aaron Rodgers returned. Did not go as planned, but as Vinny said, they'll probably start to get it together as the season progresses here. We have Thursday night football. We have Friday night football, Sunday slate, and then Monday night. So week one in the books. Since we've seen that action get completed, let's talk about the 12 best teams going into week two. Vinny's Dirty Dozen.
All right, let's review week one. 1, Kansas City, 2, Baltimore, 3, San Fran, 4, Detroit, 5, Green Bay, 6, Cincinnati, 7, Houston, 8, Philly, 9, Jacksonville, 10, Atlanta, 11, the Jets, 12, Miami. So, week two. And these will change a lot over the next first 4 weeks. Coming in at number 12, 1-0 Miami beat Jacksonville 2017. They are playing, hosting Buffalo Thursday night. Miami led the NFL with 319 passing yards. Now, Bob, they say touchdown passes are like way down over since it's the least amount of touchdown passes week one since like 2014 or something.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty crazy.
Baker had 4.
Hey-o. Yeah. Coming in at number 11, 1-0 Buffalo. Beat Arizona 34-28. They're at Miami Thursday night. Defensive end Gregory Rousseau leads the AFC with 3 sacks. Not bad. That's a pretty good start.
Yep.
Coming in at 10, the L.A. Chargers. 1-0. Beat the Raiders 22-10 at Carolina. How about that for schedule? Chargers led the NFC with 6.52 yards per rush.
J.K. Dobbins, huge afternoon for the Chargers.
Go ahead, guys. Congrats to those guys. You see, afterwards, Harb's got a game ball, and then it was like, who's got it better than us? Nobody. Yeah.
And you call Michigan, see what happened to them on Saturday? Yeah.
Coming in at 9, 0-1 L.A. Rams. They lost at Detroit 26-20 in overtime. They're at Arizona. Cooper Kupp led the NFC with 14 catches, had 21 targets, 6 more than any other wide receiver in the league.
Puka Nacua on IL for them.
That with the knee.
Yeah. Kind of a flip from last year.
Sure.
With Kupp being out. Coming in at number 8, 1-0 Tampa. Beat Washington 37-20. They're at Detroit. Tampa converted 70% of their third downs versus Washington. That's amazing. That's amazing. Coming in at 7, 1-0 Dallas. Beat Cleveland 33-17. They're hosting New Orleans, which New Orleans got off to a hell of a start.
That's going
to
be an interesting game there on Sunday afternoon.
How about this, Bob? Dallas led the NFL 6 sacks in week 1.
Yep. Deshaun Watson was running for his life.
Yeah. And who do the Ravens play? Not this Sunday, but the following?
At Dallas.
Yep. Coming in at 6, 0-1 Baltimore. They lost 27-20, as we know. They're hosting the Raiders. Number 1 in total offense with 452 yards versus Kansas City.
Number 8 had a lot to do with that.
Yeah. He had like, 300 of it? Coming in at number 5, 1-0 Houston. Beat Indy 29-27 in one of the most exciting games of the day. They're hosting Chicago. Houston ran 76 offensive plays in week 1 to lead the NFL. Ooh, I'll bet you those guys were sucking wind.
Yeah, and still barely won. Yep. That was maybe the game of the day, Houston against the Colts. Diggs, 2 TDs, and Joe Mixon had a big one.
Coming in at 4, 1-0 Philly. Beat Green Bay 34-29. They're hosting Atlanta Monday night. Oh, that place is going to be crazy up in Philly. Saquon Barkley had 132 yards and 3 TDs in week 1, Giants. You don't think the Giants fans... New York paper probably put a picture of, after that game Sunday, they probably put a picture of Barkley up.
I saw on the interweb Giants fans burning Daniel Jones jersey. Ouch.
Coming in at 3, 1-0 Detroit. Beat the Rams 26-20 in overtime. They're hosting Tampa, which will be a physical game. Jack Fox led the NFC, averaging 57.5 yards per punt.
Oh, there you go.
Damn. That's indoors. Coming in at 2, 1-0 San Fran. Beat the Jets last night 32-19. They're at the Vikings. Niners had 38 rushes for 180 yards, both tied for the NFC lead.
Yeah, Mason got the opportunity, fourth year out of San Francisco, or Georgia Tech, rather.
Yeah, 22.
Had a monster day.
Did you see, though, he did an interview with Lisa Salters on the sidelines, and he said, yeah, I've known since Friday night that I was going to start.
Yeah.
And then, so the Niners are in a little bit, and then Kyle Shanahan after the game. No, he was mistaken what he said.
Yeah, he meant Monday night.
Right. Coming in at 1, 1-0 Kansas City. They beat the Ravens. Rookie Xavier Worthy, only NFL player to have a 20-plus rushing TD and a 30-plus receiving TD.
And was really fast when he did them, too.
He not only runs fast, he plays fast. Yeah. All right, so in review, 1 Kansas City, 2 San Fran, 3 Detroit, 4 Philly, 5 Houston, 6 Baltimore, 7 Dallas, 8 Tampa, 9 the Rams, 10 the Chargers, 11 Buffalo, and 12 Miami.
coming up later in the show, 1:30 to be exact. We'll get the Feeble Five. Who are the five worst teams in the NFL through week one? Nolan, we have time for a call or no? Nolan says no. He Mutombo's the phone calls. When we come back, Kevin Ostreicher, USA Today, the Ravens Wire, talk about last Thursday's loss and look ahead to the home opener against the Las Vegas Raiders. Ravens, big favorites, 9.5 points. But no Lamar practiced yesterday. What does any of this mean? Whip around coming up at 11:15. And then Ryan Ripken will talk about the Orioles struggling. Five games below 500 since they beat the Yankees on June 20th. Now a game and a half out of first. They're going to the playoffs, but is that going to be good enough given the expectations of just 2 months ago?